You believe in Jesus?
Yes, I do.
Well, you're going to meet him.
You see what fun this is? It's going to get really exciting. I know what to do now. They've made it clear.
You warriors are good. Real good. The best.
This is the end of your rotten life, you motherfucking dope pusher.
We'd make one hell of a team, Snake.
The name's Plissken.
Forever, the official podcast of Grindhouse Cinema Database. I'm Pete Roberts, and I'm here with my special guest, Phil Duke from Making Tarantino, the new podcast about all the films that have influenced Quentin Tarantino over the years. And I'm very happy to have him back. Hey, Phil, how you doing?
I am good, and I'm proud. I'm happy to be back, and I think we should just make this a regular thing.
So we're back for another double feature from that happened on the Deuce on April 10th, 1984. The first movie is Alley Cat, from that came out in 1984, and it was directed by Edward Victor, but it actually was three directors made this. It was Al Valletta, Victor Ordonez, and Ed Palmos.
Yeah, I don't know
what that was all about.
I was trying to figure that out. I tried to, sometimes IMDb is crazy with their facts where you're like, that's not even a fact. That's just, this guy ate a frog in this movie, and he also ate a frog in that movie. I don't care.
Right, yeah.
But this was like, they didn't really go into explaining, but three different directors. It's like, it seemed all the same. It seemed to me like the same tone,
Yeah, I don't know how that worked, but and also I didn't really know any of the stars in the movie, and I didn't really know anybody like in this movie at all.
Yeah.
Cause it was like one of those one-off low budget exploitation films. So I was, trying to the star of the movie is Karen Mani. And we were saying, we didn't really see her in anything else.
Yeah.
I think she was in Avenging Angel a couple years later, but I mean, I don't really remember that movie, but
yeah, I'd have to rewatch it, but they said that she's like in a smaller part. This is like her main, like a big role for this one. But what I did say off
mic role,
was, forgive me for being a pig, but she has a very nice breast.
Yeah.
So, I like that.
Right, we agreed on that.
Yeah, exactly. Two thumbs up from Cecil Green Ebert.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And
go ahead.
Yeah, so I was just going to read the little synopsis, and that'll kind of like help us like get into it. So it's Billy Clark is 20 years old. Billy Clark is played by Karen Mani, very pretty and without a care in the world, until a brutal street gang violates her life and she turns into an alley cat bent on revenge. When the gang attacks her grandparents' house, Billy uses her black belt prowess to fight them off. But at the same time, she earns their hatred, and she and her grandparents are marked for vengeance. When her grandparents lose their lives to brutal thugs, Billy becomes like a cat stalking her prey, and no prison or police force can get in the way of her avenging claws. She's a one-woman vigilante squad, a martial arts queen, a crack shot with no mercy. She's the alley cat.
It's a good synopsis. It doesn't give away too much, but it sucks with the name of it. Like, you tell anybody, go see Alley Cat.
Alley Cat.
They're going to go, what is that? Like Aristocats? Like what? And you're like, no, it's Alley Cat. And I don't know what I would have titled it, but, was cool about this, I don't know if you want to get into it yet, was the way it starts. Like I thought like any revenge-o-matic, they're trying to steal the wheels off of her car. She's going to go down there. She's going to get her ass kicked, and then she's going to go train like fucking, the man with no name and Fistful of Dollars. And then she'll come back and kill everyone. But instead, no, she's prepared. She's kicks ass. Like you said, she's got a black belt.
That's really what sets this one apart, because like, as we know, in most revenge-o-matics, there's some traumatic incident, and the person usually isn't like trained in any special, they're usually just a normal average person.
Yeah.
And then after the traumatic event, then they train in whatever, weapons or karate or, whatever it is, kung fu.
Yeah.
And then they go get their revenge. But with this Billy character, she's already like a karate expert. So it's like when the first guys show up and steal her hubcaps, she kicks her ass.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's like we're right into the movie already, which is that was interesting because it was just different than
and they go running off and you're just like, okay, like
now what? She kicked their ass and she already won the whole thing. Yeah.
And it's insane because, like you and I said, this was the 80s, and I don't know if things have changed. Like if you're saying New York, I get it. Like whoever the mayor was of New York who cleaned up everything and got rid of the sex shops.
Mayor Koch. I don't know who it was.
One of those. Got rid of all the sex shops and all that and made it clean. And I think that's why they got rid of the grindhouses and all this. But like the Warriors and shit like that, where you're like, like I told you last time when we did it, was like that gang and that Vengeance was like, what was the movie that we watched before?
The Vigilante movie
was like, you're like, oh shit, like I don't want to run into these. This is the same thing. Like I'm like, oh fuck. But then she kicks her ass. You're almost like, don't go out there by yourself. Like you're changing, putting on your shoes and gonna run out there and kick their ass. No, wait a minute.
Right.
But what was,
but cool, there's no like, go ahead.
You were just about the actors. Some of these guys, I was even watching Chicago PD with the wife before we started recording.
Yeah.
And some of these guys who are on just for like a small little role of some thug in the thing, and he's being questioned. Yeah. And you're like, this actor is really cool. Like, I wonder.
Right. What very charismatic or whatever. Is, yeah.
And so this guy who played Scarface, I was like, this guy looks familiar.
Michael Wayne, his name was.
And you look him up and he hasn't been in anything else. And I'm like,
have never seen any of these people before.
He was cool and creepy, and I love it. And just like for his acting, but
they don't call him Scarface in the movie. I noticed. His name is Phil, isn't it? His name is Phil or something. Like he's like, hey Phil, this girl is causing trouble, and we're gonna go get her. He's like, take. He goes. This girl's a real tiger, and he goes, well, when we get done with this tiger, she's just gonna be an alley cat or something like that. I thought that was just a good little line. There's some good little lines in the movie like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the thing of like him being like, oh, she beat you up, really? Like, go back and fucking, you know, deal with it.
Yeah, you just like go right.
Yeah,
some little girl, like some little, you know, kick their ass. But yeah, but I mean, the whole movie is like we were saying, it's like, it's paced really well, but there's not a ton. It's not one of those movies like that goes too far with any of the action or violence or anything. It kind of just kind of stays on like a certain level.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wished it could have gone even further with that stuff. You know what I mean? It's not like a Miss 45. There's no rape stuff really going on or anything like that.
The,
but
the fights that are, type of stuff. They put a little difference into the different fights, but it's still a little bit of kicking and flipping. And then that guy's like, oh, I'm out.
That's it. Know, and whatever. That's it. He falls down. Yeah. And another thing I thought was funny about this movie was there's no like in Death Wish, when you watch, like he actually makes a decision to go out in the night and like get back at like, you know, all the criminals and stuff. But in this movie, she doesn't really like consciously show her decision to, she just goes out and runs at night. And you're like, is she running at night because these guys are going to, she knows these guys are going to like come up to her, or is she like, or is it just like a like coincidence that they're like, these like guys are like running out of the woods saying, hey, you want to go out on a date tonight? Like, it was just really funny. Like the way they did that. I just thought it was cool and funny.
And I think that first, they didn't really explain it that way, but I think that first run was her just jogging. And then the second one was, okay, I'm going to draw them out. But what was funny is she meets that cop guy. And he's like, hey, I'm going to go do karate. You want to go join me? And she's like, sure. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because she's wearing the brown belt or the white belt that a new person uses. And then she kicks his ass. And then her instructor walks over and pulls out the black belt that is hers and puts it on.
I don't even remember. That's funny. Yeah, that's
the guy, and the cop like looks at her like, oh shit, like I guess you do know your shit, you know. But it's like these guys are like, so like that one main guy is like running the whole show, talking bad to his girlfriend, and she's just like, you know, screw you.
Those are some
like,
funny little lines still with him.
Yeah, just back and forth. But but yeah,
I gave you the clap or whatever she said.
Yeah.
He goes, now you got the clap. And he's like, ah, damn it. And then they cut to the next scene.
And then
I just thought that was funny, those little moments.
And her beating them up, which is always great. Yeah. But then they go to court, which is weird. And it was another court moment. It was another, you know, that, you know, you didn't plan this.
Those,
but on Vigilante, he did the court thing.
That's right. There's another court moment in there. The other side like bribes the judge or something. Or I forget what exactly what they did, but the guys get off or something, and then she bursts out in court and she kind of does what Robert Forster did in the other movie. She's like yelling back at him, like saying, you know, you son of a bitch or whatever she said, and then she's like contempt of court, and they send her to prison.
Because,
and then it's like, you know, women in prison movie.
And because it's that thing of which, of course, gets you riled in the theater. Yeah, I hope she gets her revenge. Because it's a thing of, she's like, so it's kind of like people say, like, if it's attempted murder or you did something like, then that's going to be this many years. So if I would have let them kill me, then they'd be in jail longer, you know, or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm explaining it right, but it's like that where she's pretty much getting angry at them and like, okay, you like, what am I supposed to do? And they're like, well, you had a gun.
Right.
You shouldn't have had a gun. You didn't have it, you know, that cop being rude to her. Right. Like we said, that was a thing back in the 80s of like the mean cops who don't get it. And then you have to
good
go.
Cop, it was good cop, bad cop in this movie. Because the one cop is like really mean to her and stuff like that. And then the other cop is obviously she falls in love with the other cop. Johnny, I think his name is.
The good cop and did look familiar, but I couldn't think of what he was from.
Yeah.
But he did look very he looked like somebody. Dang it. Now I can't think of it.
I'm
but
like,
looked,
oh, yeah, this here's Richard Marx again.
Yeah. Pretty
this
much.
This is Richard Marx.
Like, oh, yeah. Sing me a song.
I was like, okay.
Right here waiting.
So it was like, then another part that I thought was interesting was like those two guys are fighting each other. So like, you know, the bad cop guy is like, you should tell your girlfriend not to be so stupid or something like that. And they get into this big fight in the garage. And that was like a good little action sequence. I'm like, the guy's shooting his gun at him, like over this. I'm like, I couldn't believe it.
It was really cool. Hitting him with the garbage cans and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And
but shooting his gun, like he's like firing his gun at this guy
like at his feet. Like, it was a good fight.
Nuts.
It was all over. It was probably the best fight of the whole thing.
That was a good one.
Flipped, but that was probably the best one because it was so different.
That was almost like a real fight. Yeah.
You were like, this is in the parking garage of the courthouse. Like,
yeah, there's no cops around at all. It's just those two, like, you know, taking like beating the crap out of each other.
But that's the thing with these grindhouse movies that I told you I wanted to get to, kind of like, what is it? Why can't we make these now? Like, now everybody wants these Marvel movies. So you spend all this money.
Yeah.
Like, spend money on making like a regular, like, did you see The Hunt where the rich people are hunting the, you know,
I've heard of it, but I mean,
it's really good. But that was one, or like I mentioned Becky to you off mic, which was this one with Kevin James, and he's like a bad guy, and he invades this house, and this girl, the only one left, and she's like 13, and she has to fight back. So it's like Home Alone, but rated R, and it's really fun.
Well, the one I really liked. I don't know if you saw it. Did you see Nobody with Bob Odenkirk? That's sort of like that would be sort of like a modern version of a grindhouse movie for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like anything. There's the effects aren't. It's not all based on CGI. It's not like a superhero movie, but it's more like a vigilante, like, you know, revenge-o-matic type film.
Even
like, style, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Remember they did that one? It was.
I really loved that one.
They were kind of doing like a blaxploitation. It was
Black Dynamite or something.
It was
no,
this was more where it was called Proud Mary.
Oh, with what's her face with Taraji P. Henson or something. Taraji P. Henson.
Yes.
Yeah, I never saw that, but I heard of it. And
I saw that in the theater and it was fun.
Yeah.
But it's one of those where more of these kind of underlying. You know, why don't more of these come out? But now everybody says like, well, nobody will go to the theater. We need to bring them with the big thing. And some people say it's 75 that, you know, when Jaws came out, that made everybody go, we can make
everything.
These big blockbusters. Yeah.
Right. I don't know. I think a lot of times it's not what they do. It's how they do it. Like you can still do these, like you could make a Western now. And if someone made it and it was really like, yeah, it had like a certain style or something, it would catch on with everyone, but not like Hostages, not everything like is, think.
Wasn't you know? That the yeah. one with Christian Bale?
Hostages.
It was like a Western. It was like really cool.
I think so. I heard of it. I didn't see it.
Or on Netflix, yeah. The Harder They Fall. Like that was really good, you know?
Yeah. I didn't see that.
You need to check it out. If you have Netflix. But yeah,
it's very hit and miss with like the modern.
These movies stuff. Are really good and really cool.
Yeah.
And I get where some people are like I haven't seen it yet, but, Mr. No Legs, I think is the name of it.
Mr. No, I didn't see that either, actually. I've heard of it, though. I just haven't gotten around to it.
There's movies like that that are cheesy, but that they're fun to watch. And then there's ones like on the show, on my show that I do, Making Tarantino, Me and My Cousin, is the thing of I look at it like, because you have to realize when Quentin went to the theater, or even people watching these movies go to the theater, and they're like, you know, oh, you got to see where this girl, she gets fucking wheels are taken. She puts on her clothes and her sneakers, runs out there and kicks her ass. You got to see it, you know, or like, you know, Rolling Thunder. Yeah. You got to see this guy like sharpening his thing, cutting off his shotgun. He goes and kills everybody, you know, go see it. Cause you can't just, well, like my wife said the other day, we found out Cocaine Bear this morning, found out is coming out on the 14th on Peacock.
Yep.
And I'm like, and she goes, see, that's why we didn't pay $30 to buy it a week ago,
right?
Because it's coming out soon. But that's the thing. Back then, you couldn't, you didn't know when this movie that's kind of an under the radar movie, like Alley Cat, when's it coming? When it's coming out? And you're like, no, it's got this really cool bad guy. You got to see this bad guy. If you're into acting, you got to see this guy. You know, or even you know the next one we're gonna do. It's you know, and so
that guy reminded me a little of John Philip Law for some reason. He reminded me of like a sleazy John Philip Law guy for some reason. If you watch the movie, you'll be like, you kind of reminds me of him.
And also a little bit of the guy that we talked about that was in Vigilante for Maniac, that guy. Like it reminded me of
Joe Spinell. Joe Spinell. Yeah, he was kind of like a sleazy guy.
Just being weird, But but yeah, it's those things where you would see these movies and then be like, I gotta go and see that part again. You know, so I'm going to pay the $3 to go see it or take some friends, like, let's go see it, you know. So,
I don't even think, I mean, I guess this was on VHS back in the day, but I never saw it. But I mean, you know, back when the you know, in the 80s, like, but it was more like you had to go see, actually go see the movie again. Like you wouldn't go buy the VHS or something. You just, you know, you'd have to like wait for it to
come out on VHS. Well, and even when I remember... I'm 51. So I remember we went to the, we had a Beta machine. So when we to the, when we went to the video store, I was like, oh, look, let's get this. And then they were like, does it have an orange sticker? And I'm like, no. And they're like, that's VHS. We have to get the Beta. So we had to go and get one with an orange sticker. Like, you know, they had some
Beta.
Good ones.
I don't even think I watched Beta.
But the main ones were like, well, and Beta is supposed to be like a master tape. Like, you know,
wasn't Beta like a small tape too? It was like a smaller,
It was stubby and fat, but it was like, you know, supposed to be better, but then they just said VHS is cheaper to do. But it's that thing of, you don't know when it's coming out, you know, at least then I was working at Suncoast when like videos started becoming like when they weren't $90 to buy. My buddy bought Vampire Hunter.
That's where I used to buy all my stuff there.
$90.
Yeah.
And then it started being, they have Aladdin for $20. They have, you know, Lion King or, you know, Star Wars.
I think that's where I actually first used to, when I first started buying VHS, that's where I used to go, Suncoast.
Yeah. And so it's
back in the 90s.
It's where you wouldn't know. It's also back to the thing of this became a two old guys podcast talking about the old times, but it became that thing of the hunt for the video.
Yeah,
just like this. If you saw Grindhouse, there may be some of these movies that you've heard that are like it's finally being released by Vinegar Syndrome or something where it's never been.
Yeah, and I had that happen with me with the Street Fighter movies because for years I was looking for those after I saw True Romance. I wanted to see the Sonny Chiba movies.
Yeah,
and like they finally came out on VHS in like I don't know when it was. 2000 or 19, like I don't know, it was 90s, earlier than that. It was
Yeah.
It was like the late 90s, and I got those, and that was like such an awesome thing to find. I was like, oh, this is exactly what I was looking for.
Well, and that's the same thing with John Woo movies. Like, I want to find the old Hong Kong John Woo movies. All I can find is
like Hard Boiled and
iTunes. I have Hard Boiled and The Killer is available, but like, you know, Better Tomorrow 1 is available on iTunes for $20. Better Tomorrow 2, you can't find. Like, you got to hunt for it.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, hope that it's not a copy of a copy of a copy. But that was my thing was just these movies. You never knew when they were going to come out. It was a fun experience more than what we said. Like, you go see one of these new ones now and you're like, oh, it's all CGI. Like, what the hell? You know, unless it's Avatar.
Yeah, there was just a different time.
Yeah.
And I always feel like, you know, the people like maybe look down on grindhouse movies a lot. But I always feel like if they made these movies on like no budget and they still entertained audiences, that's kind of like a good thing for that. So that makes them like look good to me. I mean, gives, you know what I mean? That's like, good score for them.
And people listening are going to be like, no, we love grindhouse movies. And then the other thing of where like they people like actors will say, we don't put out to make a bad movie. We don't try to make a bad movie. Right. We try to make a good movie.
Right.
And it's like, I forget what actor I just listened to recently that was saying like, I've been on a movie where it might've been Jamie Foxx, but if you're on it wasn't Jamie Foxx, somebody else. But anyway, if the movie, if you can tell, from the way it is, like either the director doesn't have it or you can't get the tone, there's something off and you know that, oh, this movie's going to be bad. And it's a bad feeling to have that. And then there's ones that you're there, everybody's having a good time. And that's these things with these little movies of like Sid Haig and Pam Grier hanging out, singing, you know, church hymns to each other before they start filming. Yeah. Like, because they're we're in Taiwan filming, so, you know, or wherever they are, Philippines, filming a movie. And let's
filming the big bird cage.
And they're having fun with it. And there's brutal stuff that goes on where you're like, ooh, how was that done? And then you watch whatever the fascist thing where Ilsa's like the girl that played Ilsa, the SS.
Diane Thorne.
Yeah. She's like, we had fun. And I meet people all the time that love it. And, you know, and the other actors enjoyed it. You know, everybody was having a good time. So. Yeah, that's the biggest.
Yeah, it's really about like, you know, you can make a low budget movie and have it be like really entertaining. And that happens a lot with these movies. You watch a lot of them and they're pretty damn good for like, you know, no budget. Yeah. And, you know, the people put all their energy into it. And it's, you know, some of them are better than others. But then Hollywood movies, some of them are better than others and they're not that great. You can make a $200 million flop and, you know, just like you can make a, you know, $800,000 flop. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never really been like prejudiced against that type of stuff.
Yeah. You just got to go with what your heart says. Like, let's just make this movie and have fun, you know, and get everybody the same minded on board. But yes, I'm sorry that I went off on a tangent.
Getting back to the movie, one thing I noticed. Oh, yeah. That's no problem. That was good. But I was wondering, it was interesting. I was watching the movie and like I noticed it didn't have like a normal score either. This one, because it almost sounded like a 70s movie. And I found out that all the tracks are just all separate movie, like from like the library scores. They're not like, it's not like an actual, I think the main theme of the movie was the only thing in it. The only original part of the music, but all the other stuff, like I found an actual track that I knew I had heard somewhere. And it's called Acquittal by David Lindup. If you can find it online, you can play the song. You'll be like, oh yeah, that's the it's right at the very beginning when that guy goes in the garage. It has like that weird like suspense music.
Oh yeah.
If you play that, you'll be like, oh yeah, that's it. It's just some like random like library score, like, which is, I just thought that was weird the way they did it. I didn't know why they didn't have like a real score. I guess it was budgetary, I guess.
And budget problems or something. For me though, it didn't stand out. It seemed to work. Yeah. Like we were talking off mic. I'm sorry.
It did work pretty good, but
But the movie Fair Game has this guitar thing going on, this rock and roll guitar thing that pulls me out. I'm like, tone it down or something. Like, I would really love that.
Yeah, the tone is too high.
If that music wasn't
there. If it had a different score.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes away from like the suspense or something like it. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? It would probably be even better, like you were saying, without something so loud and like, you know, blaring at you. Like
it, like the
it takes away that feeling.
But this one, it seemed okay. I didn't notice that, but you did because you've seen more of these than I have. And you're like, wait a minute, I know that song. Yeah. Or it's like, I remember speaking to that. I remember watching Dynamite Brothers or one of those Kung Fu movies.
Oh, yeah.
And they go to chase each other. And when they get in a car to go chase, Live and Let Die starts playing.
Yeah.
And you're like, how did they get the rights to Live and Let Die?
Yeah, well, that was a common thing. And another thing I was going to say about that, the score was this one's almost scored like an old school kung fu film, because they would what they would do is they'd take scores from other movies. Yeah. So you'll be watching like a Bruceploitation movie and like you'll hear the theme from Rocky or something playing or a theme from like a spaghetti western playing. So that was sort of like the way this one was done, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of the guys that did it were like Filipino or something.
Yeah.
Like it started out as a Filipino movie and then they moved over to Los Angeles or something like that, I read. But it was just interesting. So you notice like that style.
I really enjoyed it. It was good. I thought the girl did
it was good. Yeah.
But I wish she was in a little more. Like I can see where she's not going to take off. But I liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie.
Hitting
the cop with the door, breaking his nose almost. Like, you know.
Yeah, that was good. And that was like, that was how they met, like at the very beginning, right? When they.
Yeah.
And he's like, you want to go on a date, by the way?
And like you said, attacking the grandma and the grandpa. And like,
Yeah.
Like, oof.
But it's like, what I was saying, like, I'll give it I said I liked it and everything, but I just felt like it could have gone further with everything. Like it could have had a little bit more fighting, some more violence. Like, cause some like we were saying, it doesn't have any real traumatic, like, you know, the traumatic part of the thing is her grandmother gets stabbed and that's kind of like and then she dies. And that's kind of what drives her to be like a vigilante, but it's the way it's done. It's not like super impactful or anything, like, you know what I mean? It's not,
to me, it's like John Wick.
Yeah.
Where John Wick is not getting hurt, you know, he's getting hurt a little bit through his movies.
Yeah.
But she's like that. Like it's not like John Wick.
Doesn't really get hurt at all. Actually,
she has these skills. Yeah. She's never hurt. They don't break her arm or rape her or do something.
And she doesn't have that thing where she has to come back in the third act. Like she's just kind of like the same way all the way through the movie. Yeah. There's no you know, like she doesn't lose anybody and then, she has to like build herself back up again or something. Or they don't like attack her and beat her up and she has to like get back to normal. She's just sort of like the same way through the whole film, which is different. It's probably not as good as it could have been if they had added something like that.
Foxy Brown? I always forget. The one where they give her drugs. They tie her to the bed.
Yeah, that's Foxy Brown. That's what I mean. That type of idea. Right.
That's okay. That's what we need. Then she goes and comes back, and you're like, oh shit.
She breaks free, and then she gets back. Then she gets the revenge. But there was nothing like that in this movie.
Yeah, I never thought about that watching it, but now that you say that, yes, for sure. Yeah, And I'm with
you. Also, even the bad guys weren't very. Yeah, even the bad guys weren't very like. You know, they weren't like real super tough or anything. They were kind of like, she just kicked their asses. At one point she drives over to their house and like goes into their yard and like the guys are like having like a beer. And she's like, what are you, you know, like she just goes up and like kicks their butts and like, what the hell happened? Like it was just kind of funny the way they did that. I was like,
they're all drinking. That was different. Like, you know? Yeah. They're all drinking Am's beer.
Yeah.
It's the thing.
She's like, what are you doing here? She's like driving around looking for him or something.
I lost my thought. I forgot what I was going to, but it's the thing that, it's nothing. It's not. Oh yeah. I know what I was going to say. It's like the beginning,
it's not the normal thing.
If she was Bruce Lee, the beginning of Enter the Dragon.
Yeah.
And all these guys were the guys that fight Bruce Lee in the beginning of Enter the Dragon. That's what they were. They were just white shirts that are being flipped over.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you go, that's Sammo Hung. Oh, wait, that's Jackie Chan. But other than that,
Jackie Chan,
they're just guys being flipped over.
Right.
And so, but they had different fights. And it was funny where you'd laugh about how somebody might like pass out or whatever. That's still funny.
Yeah.
And I think even like I watch it, like I was telling my co-host on Making Tarantino, I talk to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be like, oh, shit. Now you're getting it.
Talking back to the movie.
Yeah. And then when they get knocked out or something, I'm like, I laugh because they die funny or they knock out funny, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but just And I think even back then in 84, they were like laughing about, oh, this is fun. Like, and that's the other thing where
it is
where you got to watch it with people. Like I was listening to a podcast recently where some guys were talking about The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. And they were like, I didn't get it. This part was supposed to be like him being a thespian and being in disguise, but he was horrible accent. I didn't think it was funny. I thought it was bad. They should have got rid of that. And I'm like, no, me and my cousin, he came here to visit. We saw it in the theater and everybody was laughing at all the right moments.
Really?
And it made the movie even better, which is,
that's what you want. I mean,
a bad thing, because then you get out and you're like, I got to buy that movie. That's going to be great. I got to buy it. And you watch it at home. Right. And it was still good. But there was something about, like people say, that
right
experience in the
theatrical experience with the people. The communal experience, or even
you come over and we drink some beers and we watch Alley Cat and we're having a hell of a good time and we're watching them beat up people.
Right.
So yeah, that.
Right. And I mean, that's what you wanted. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure when people went to see this, they had a good time watching it. I think it's where I'm coming from is I've seen so many of these movies now. I'm kind of thinking about it like in an analytical sense. Like I'm not I'm talking to the people that have seen that are into all these movies and they know all this stuff and they're trying to get the bottom line from someone that knows all this.
Yeah. Yeah. This if they're of, like, should we watch cinema, Alley Cat?
You know what I mean?
You're like,
I would. Yeah.
It's no Death Wish.
It's no Miss 45 or whatever, whatever, you know what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying. But I mean, as far as like a generally entertaining movie, I'd say, it was entertaining. Yeah. And I liked, I'm just being like, critical about the stuff, that I think could have been better or something.
No. And I get that
fine for a low budget movie
with me, even on my show, but even watching these for you, where I'll be like, I look at it like, okay, it's 84. I'm going to see this movie and I'm seeing it for the first time. Like if it's something that you hear about, then just get rid of all that and be like, no, I'm going to go in fresh. Right. Like, I don't even know,
right.
Like, I just know that this is called Alley Cat and it's a Revenge-O-Matic and that's it.
Yeah. You want to let it like a surprise you or whatever, let you down or surprise you. You just go with it and just go with it.
But I can get that too, where yes, it's also like, but it's not this.
Yeah.
Like, so if you're here, don't you check out Alley Cat way down the road. Like maybe make that your 18th choice before you watch.
Or watch it with something else. Watch it like a double feature of like Death Wish and Alley Cat and like see if you go, oh yeah, he's exactly, I totally disagree with him on that.
That's, it's
way better than Death Wish. You'll know what I'm saying if you watch, revenge movie with it.
Because now that
you should have done this or,
that really makes me think now because I don't know, kudos to them for doing that, but also bad of them to do that because what other movie has where somebody just fights? Like we said, even John Wick gets hurt, gets shot, gets, bruised, whatever.
She doesn't Alley get Cat hurt doesn't all. Get hurt really.
And what other Grindhouse movie?
Pretty good.
I've seen some. I haven't seen maybe as many as you, but what other movie does that where they just walk through the film and they're like,
they just get through it. Really nothing happens. I mean, it was that's kind of cool in a way, but at the same time, it like, you want to, I don't know what you just, I just wanted more like violent. I don't know what I wanted from it. Just a little bit more of like more shock or something from it.
I think
a little
like more said, shock. Need,
so it wasn't that, just so like,
it needs that hero's journey. You need that,
it needs more of a hero journey, like some type of like
the Death Wish,
Right. When he gets beat up or something in Fistful of Dogs.
But
overall, I thought it was pretty good.
Death Wish had that though, where he's fine, but his family was killed and raped.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think they're going, well, let's go.
And you really felt it in that too, I thought.
You need something else. You either need to really set up like John Wick how badass she is.
Right.
And then go through.
You know what movie I always measure? Yeah. You know what movie I always measure it for? Measure it to is Death Wish 3. Because in that movie, like the whole movie is just like filled with these punks that are just like terrorizing everybody. Yeah. And like, yeah. you're like, you got to get back at these guys. And like, you know, he finally get back. Yeah. You really feel it, like, because they're just terrorizing everybody. Now in Alley Cat, there really isn't that. They're just kind of like stealing hubcaps or like, you know, beating up like someone walking down the street or something. It's nothing like real heavy stuff. Like, it's pretty lightweight stuff as far as like vigilante movies goes for me, but whatever. No, it was still pretty fun. I mean, it was a good little, you know, Saturday night movie to watch, like, you know, just, you know. I Karen Mani was good. She was like a good little actress.
I give it 3.5 and a half, but after this next movie, maybe I should give it 3. And after what you said now, really makes
me. You were saying
it was good. It was done with a good quality.
Yeah.
But maybe, drop it down to 3. I have to go back into my letterbox and move it down to 3. I think you talked me into it. I'm going to move it down to 3.
Yep. Okay, well, you gotta, you know, you just have to, I have to like think about stuff when I, you know, we have to think about it and like try to like decide what, you know, you're like, we were saying, you're like measuring it, like we were talking about Letterboxd. I just thought this was interesting to think about. You're watching like Alley Cat, you know, one night and you give it like 4 stars. Then you watch Citizen Kane and you give that 5 stars. Okay, so that's 1 star away from Citizen. It just doesn't, why they find the star thing kind of screwed up in a way. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, it's almost like they should have subgenres of like stars, like have like 5 stars in revenge films or Grindhouse. 5 stars in like, you know.
Yeah, vampire movies. You
know
what I'm saying?
That type of thing. I don't know. It's just funny.
Yeah, it should.
Yeah, 5 stars for a vampire movie or
genres. Yeah. Yeah,
is this Count Yorga five? You know, Count Yorga level, or is it, you know, or is it Hammer Horror level? You know, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah,
just different like, levels of stuff here. But
No, that's
another whole story.
So what would you give it? Let's say out of your 5, if you had a 5.
See, the thing is, I'd have to. I'm going with just like measuring it against other like revenge films or something. Yeah. So I would give it like probably like 3 or something, maybe.
Okay.
If I was like, because if say like Death Wish is 4 or 5, then I'd give this probably like 3 or something, maybe 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Or if Miss 45 is like a 5, I'd give that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't measure it again in that way. It just doesn't make sense.
I was wondering if I was still too high and how low, if you were like, no, this is a 1, like, or a 2. But it was still fun and it was good.
It's so, better than that. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good for a low budget movie, and it had enough going on in it where, like, you know what I mean? So
And the way I look at it is 2.5 would be, it was okay. It was good. It was whatever.
Yeah.
You don't want to use good, excellent. 3 whatever,
is.
But 2.5 is right in the middle. Was it right in the middle? It's a little better than average. Okay. Let's give it a 3. That's how I look at it.
I guess I'll go with 3 then too. Yeah. I'll go with 3 then too, because that makes sense the way you're describing it. So, okay. So you want to go on to the next film now?
Yes. Okay. I can't wait. So excited.
So the next film. Yeah. The next film is Mark L. Lester's Class of 1984. And that came out in 1982. And it premiered on August 20th in the United States. And that's my birthday, by the way. So it was on my birthday in 1982.
And, mine's August 26th.
And I just wanted to read a So we're both in that year, that month. So I just wanted to read a little excerpt from Roger Ebert's review of the movie, which I was surprised to find out that he really liked it.
Oh,
this is what he wrote back when he reviewed it. He wrote, Class of 1984 has received some really savage criticism. Newsweek called it Class of 1982 with herpes. What does that mean? I don't know. I guess it means the critic found the movie so hateful that it wasn't worth anything more than cheap wisecracks. But unless we can accept talent wherever we find it in the movies, and especially in smaller genre movies without big stars, we're going to be left with nothing but overpriced lead balloons and delicate little exercises in sensibility. Class of 1984 is raw, offensive, vulgar, and violent, but it contains the sparks of talent and wit, and it is acted and directed by people who cared to make it special. I thought that was a pretty good little review.
It's well said. Roger Ebert.
I mean, that was a nice little positive review.
He was one of the best for a reason.
And he didn't love all exploitation movies either.
Yeah.
I had this problem because I was just going to bring up, after reading that, I was going to bring up, he hated I Spit on Your Grave, but then he loved Last House on the Left. Now, for me, I find those both about the same level as far as bad, you know, terrible like content go. They're both pretty terrible. I mean, you know, I like the movies, but I mean, they're both as far as offensive stuff goes. So Now, someone also brought up that the reason he liked Last House on the Left was because it was based on Bergman's The Virgin Spring. I'm like, okay, that's the reason you liked it, just because of that? I mean, you know,
yeah,
not
yeah,
some I guy that's just so. Going yeah. to the movies isn't going to know that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah,
it just doesn't make – so I just found that strange. So I had a problem with that, but well, I was just glad to see that he liked this movie because I was like, well, you didn't – anyway.
Here's what's interesting for a conversation right now that I'm excited to have with you. So you don't like – because there's rapes in there. Last House on the Left is an awesome movie. It's on our Quentin Tarantino list, but that we'll get to sometime.
Yeah.
But now that rape is what pushes her to go. Yeah. And then the family attacking the family adds to that, you know, later. Right. So,
yes.
Don't you think, granted, it's horrible. And some people are like, I just have a hard time watching it. But it adds to the story
it
and
is.
The characterization of her to get revenge.
Revenge. That's what we were talking about on the last show. Mm-hmm. If you don't have those really terrible reasons, if you don't have those terrible traumatic events, there's no like drive to want to see the person get revenge to begin with. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
If it's just like I was saying, like if you just like come over and give someone a slap and the person falls down, they're not going to go on a revenge spree for the whole movie. Like, you know, and they're not going to, it's not going to be justified. It has to be a really hardcore reason to get the revenge.
Yeah. But I was saying, if you didn't like it because of the content, doesn't that though make it a good movie because the content, you know, makes the end game
is offensive?
No. It's the whole thing that we just said about the revenge, about she gets raped.
Yeah.
And that is her being, that's what Alley Cat needed, something like that. A rape, you know, chopping off her fingers.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Something like that.
Some type of like,
I'm saying this one has it, Last House on the Left, but you're like, I don't like it. So I guess what I was saying was, well, how do you not like it? But now I'm starting to understand what I'm saying, which is, no, you don't like the content. It could be anything, but show that rape in a minimalistic way, not so brutal to make us all uncomfortable. And then it'll be okay. You know, then, you know, you're fine with the way that.
But I mean, at the same time, it's like,
it's not good with those rapes are like it filmed in a brutal way.
Very, very brutal.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I Spit on Your Grave has like very brutal scenes in it. But Last House on the Left has very brutal scenes in it, too. I really don't see the big difference as far as like being like offending people goes. So I don't know why he chose one over the other.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it
might come down to like one little stupid detail. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Oh yeah. Since this was based on a Bergman movie, it's okay. But I Spit was an original film. So it's total trash. I just don't get that type of thinking. Like,
I get that. I was thinking that you said that you didn't like Last House on the Left. And the other one.
Oh, no. I wasn't saying that.
Because you were saying content.
Oh, no.
So I was thinking. So that's why
I'm talking more from Roger Ebert's point of view.
Right. Because I was going, well, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah. No,
I'm going to fight you on this, Peter.
Yeah, you're
I totally get it now.
That was something.
And I would be the same way. Like, come on, Roger. Like, the only thing I could see is Wes Craven's a better director.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Wes Craven's a better director than whoever directed... You know, I Spit on Your Grave.
Yeah, Mir Zarchi.
That might be why he likes that one better, because you could see the style. You know,
it could be. See, it seemed kind of biased. I thought, like, just picking like one little detail why he likes the other one better, or thinks the other one's total trash and one is good. Like, I just don't get that. But anyways, let's get back to Class of 1984.
I'm sorry.
So this movie stars Timothy Van Patten, and. We were saying we kind of grew up in the 80s, as you know, as we often say. And I first saw him on White Shadow, on the TV show White Shadow. And then when I was probably like 9 or 10, he was on a show called The Master. And that was like my kind of introduction to like ninja stuff.
Yeah.
So he was on that's where I knew him from. This is before I even saw this movie. So
yeah, that's where
he's the star I knew him from.
So when I'm watching this movie, I'm like, who is this guy? I got to look it up. Yep. And I'm like, no, I know he's Dick Van Patten's son, But I'm like, hang on, I got to look for him.
Yep.
And then I find the master.
Or his brother, like, oh, actually, his half brother.
Oh, okay. I was thinking it was his son. But I'm that makes sense.
It's his half brother, actually. Like,
Yeah. 82. Yep. Yeah. But
yeah. From different.
Right.
Much older, though. Yeah.
But then I'm like, oh my God. Like,
anyways.
Well, I mean, Dick Van Patten was the father from Eight Is Enough. But yeah, I get you.
Right.
I'm saying senior. Dick Van Patten senior. Was, but anyway, let's not get off on that. But I was like, oh, the master.
That's all confusing too. Forget it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The master.
The master was where I knew him from.
With Lee Van Cleef. Yeah. I think that's where I first saw Lee Van Cleef too, by the way.
Me too. Yeah. Lee Van Cleef being like the, you know,
that was like
teaching the ninja.
The stuff. older like teacher guy.
But yeah. And, and again, great acting in this film. This film was so more of a drama than I thought. Like, I was thinking it's grind, you know, I've always heard about it, class of 1984, and I think I kind of thought like, like, is this like the Ramones movie, is this like this high school camp thing,
rock and roll high school?
But then I
it is sort of, it does have the punk thing, but it's not like that though.
But I had seen the trailer and I was like, oh, okay, this is him, he's a teacher getting revenge. But right away when this movie starts, I'm like,
yeah,
I'm like, you know, and you and I were talking about Perry King. We know him from Riptide being in the 80s. And and then with Jake from Jake and the Fat Man. And I was like, and so it starts out. I'm telling my wife, I go, honey, like, I wouldn't even, I'd turn around, get back in my car and leave. Like, forget it. Like, this other teacher has a gun in his briefcase.
From the high school, you're saying?
Yeah. I'm like, no, I'm not going to teach her.
So I'll read. I'll read the little synopsis and then we can get back into it again. So, okay,
sorry.
It is 1984. Perry King is Andy Norris, the new music teacher at an inner city high school. Roddy McDowell is Terry Corrigan, the biology teacher who carries a gun for self-protection. Coming from a small town, Andy can't understand why the students have to pass through a metal detector to get into school. But then Andy has a lot to learn. Andy finds out the hard way. His first run-in with the school gang led by Timothy Van Patten ends mildly enough, but each confrontation gets hotter and hotter until Andy Norris and his pregnant wife are the target of the gang's most brutal assault yet, a frightening clash that pits the humanity of our present with a darkly violent future. That was a pretty good synopsis.
Yeah, really good.
So that kind of gives you like a little idea, but it's like, I guess this movie was like, I was going to say this movie was like inspired by the Blackboard Jungle. It's sort of like an 80s version, 80s punk version of Blackboard Jungle. If you watch both, you know, if you've seen that movie before with with that Glenn Ford and all those people.
And
Vic Morrow and all those.
Yeah.
And also, I guess A Clockwork Orange was a big influence on this movie, too. Clockwork Orange.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting.
Like, you know, Malcolm McDowell and the, you know, the troops and
driving Alex around in the cars. They got those weird masks on.
Sort of the punk
the
terrorizing everybody. Right. Yeah. That's like, you know, that's the terrorizing punks running around type thing. But we both really like this one. This is my favorite out of the two movies, I think.
And had you seen this one before?
I've seen this one several times before.
Okay.
Over the years, you know. I don't watch it every week or anything.
But I was surprised.
Too much.
I was surprised because it was on Peacock and it said with ads. And I thought, oh man, I go, well, I don't know.
It's on Tubi.
It's on Tubi too. Yeah. Well, on Peacock, it said ads, but it only played an ad in the beginning and then it played through the whole movie. Because I was like, oh, I go, honey, I don't know if I'm going to be done by 10 o'clock to do the show. Like, if there's going to be a bunch of ads, and then I'm like, oh, wait, there's no more ads. So just an ad in the beginning, like for a minute. But
yeah, it's
yeah, it
it's
was. Good. So when this started at first, I'm like, OK, that teacher has a gun, like there's metal detectors, like this is fun.
Something's up.
But then like I thought the main guy was that guy in the white shirt with like that ends up painting like the black eye patch at the end on his face. I thought that.
That's drugstore.
I was like, oh, I think that's a main leader. That's his nickname, drugstore. And then I'm like, oh no, that's not the main leader. The main leader is Tim Van Patten.
Yeah.
And just right away, like these kids aren't, it's the thing. And they did these movies after this. Then there was, you know, years later, there was the principal and there was Lena.
Right. I was going to bring that up actually. The principal. Yeah. sort of like, you know,
and the principal, type. I think, was more him fighting back. Lean on Me was like,
yeah,
let me try.
That's like the principal.
Lean on Me was like,
yeah, that's more of like him trying to help the kids or something.
What was that one? Dangerous Ground?
Dangerous Minds.
Dangerous Minds.
With Michelle Pfeiffer. And
yeah, so the, yeah. those two, right. Lean on Me and that one, were more like, let me teach the kids. Principal and this one right, are more right, like. Right.
And also Stand and Deliver is another one like that. Yeah. Stand and Deliver with Edward James Olmos. That's like, you know, the kids are like trying to like, and actually Summer School, and that's like a different, that's a comedy though. But I mean, it's all like stuff. I'm thinking of all like high school stuff.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of all high school stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, they're all good.
But anyways, this is more of like, this is more like, you know, kids like, you know, terrorizing the school.
Yeah,
this is like more like, what do you call it? Massacre at Central High or something, like one of those types of movies where it's like, now the kids are like, you know, actually like committing crimes and stuff.
It was like the one, again, we bring up Vigilante, but Vigilante, because of that gang was like rough, but this gang was even more rough because then they're dealing drugs.
Yeah.
That black guy's dealing drugs. Yeah. They tell him, no, we're the only ones dealing drugs. They get in that fight. And I'm like,
and you can tell they're like racist and everything too.
Yeah. And I go,
they're like, fascist. They're like fascist, racist punks.
And I go, this is like outsiders time. Like this kind of fighting, like, you know, like that's what I was always like, I don't want to go to a school like that, you know, or whatever.
And I know it's like, it was pretty scary
because of movies. You see that, or because of movies, you see prison stuff and you're like, I don't think I could survive in prison. I do not want to go to prison.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
And also
we forgot to mention a young chubby Michael J. Fox is in this.
I think this is
one of his very first movies too.
So it says Michael Fox.
You can't leave that out.
It says Michael Fox. And I'm like, is that Michael J. Fox? I go, no, I don't think so.
Yep,
and then all of a sudden I see him I'm like, oh my God, it is Michael J. Fox. And then I'm like, what's with his cheeks?
They're Marty McFly.
And he's chubby.
Yeah, he's like, a chubby little kid.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my God.
He saw his baby fat in the movie.
And exactly. And he's 20 in this movie. He's 21 in this movie.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
My wife's like, he's 21.
He doesn't look that old, that's for sure.
She goes, he looks like he's 14.
He looked like he was like 14 or something.
Yeah. And so but
that was funny.
So then the drug deal stuff, the thing of him, a teacher trying to like just get rid of them, and then that there's a scene in the bathroom where he's like, Michael J. Fox is like, you don't want to do this, like don't do any of that crap. And his friend buys drugs off of them and snorts it out of his hand. I've never seen anybody out of the palm of their hand snort coke.
He just puts it in his hand and
And
then the teacher comes in and he's like, he knows that he's selling the stuff. And he's like trying to get the, you know, the principal to like, you know, kick him out of school. But he's like, we don't know who sold the drugs to him. It could have been anybody or whatever he says.
Pulls that baggie out of the urinal. You know? I'm like, gross.
Don't
grab that.
Yeah. I know. It was like kind of, that wasn't gross.
Yeah. And then he tells the principal too, like, how do you know it could have been there before we even got there. The principal's like, all right. And he's like, no, I know it's him. And Michael J. Fox won't say a word. That kid looks high as fuck.
Yeah.
When Perry Singh is like,
and he climbs up the flagpole.
Climbs up that flagpole.
He climbs up the flagpole. And he's like, hey guys. You're like, oh shit. Now what's going to happen?
To the flag. And I'm like, honey, we used to do that in school.
Yeah. Like,
but it's that thing of Perry King later is like, if I would have only been more observant, I would have seen that he was high. I should have known that. And I'm like, I can tell his eyes were, but he did really good. That guy, like he looked like he was,
good.
Then just falls off the pole onto the ground and he's dead. And I'm like, oh shit. And that's another one where I'm like, honey, something's going to happen here. And something.
Roddy McDowell's like, let's go get a drink.
Whatever
he says, let's go get a drink.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
And he's drinking at work.
But I mean, I thought yeah, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, he was like, you want some? He's like, no. He goes,
I'm trying to think.
He goes, well, because
I
to work. Yeah.
You're going to need it or something.
He's holding the rabbit.
And also, I thought the punks did a really good job, like, you know, as far as the acting goes, like, Tim Van Patten was really good in this, villain. He was really good in this.
Yeah. Better than
his little lines.
Better than the Karate Kid and just one of the guys villain.
Oh yeah, like no, William Zabka. I mean, like he makes William Zabka look like a little like angel in this movie.
Yeah,
like,
he's exactly. You know, yeah,
he was really good in this.
That guy was good. Like everybody, like that big guy, he was like intimidating and just
the
like,
big huge
later
guy.
On wearing the Nazi shirt.
I don't know the actor's name.
Swastika shirt. Yeah. And but then that guy died. So that guy falls off the light off the flagpole, and I'm like, oh shit, this is like serious. And then they're like,
now it's on now.
Yeah. And then they're like, Michael J. Fox, so you want to talk? Like, come on, I need you to say that they bought the drugs. And he's like, I can't. And he looks right at him.
And then he goes
him,
after him.
Yeah. And then they're like,
and then they go after him. And he's like, oh no.
And it's, and that's and then another one. After him. You don't, and that's why this is good because it's, it already threw you for a loop. Okay. This is more harder than I thought it was going to be.
Right.
Then when him and the girl, when they stop him and they're like, get in the car, and he's like, no. And he grabs her and runs.
They try to run.
You're like, oh shit, they're going to track them down.
Kill them or something.
They might kill them. Like what?
Yeah.
Because it's that kind of movie now. You're like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Right. The stakes get higher and higher as the movie goes on, basically. Like,
yeah.
You know,
and
I mean,
again,
that's why it's so good about it. It's like,
and again, I'm yelling at
one thing
TV,
and then it goes another something.
That's America's sweetheart, Michael J. Fox. Don't hurt him.
And, I know.
But then the teacher
and
is
probably
like,
nobody even knew who he was back then.
Yeah, exactly.
This is. I think this is even before Family Ties too.
Yeah, this
probably
is
like right before
Family Ties. Yeah. And the teacher's like, they're driving for a beer or whatever, and then he's like, "Oh, look, what are they up to?" And he's like, "We're not even." And I'm like, "You're not in school. You have no authority here," which is pretty much what Tim Van Patten tells him. It's like, "You have no authority."
Right.
And then and they broke that bottle like right next to her, like they're gonna stab her in the face or something.
Yeah. Like, slice her throat. God. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That girl.
And then he gets there. Go ahead.
Go ahead. But what I liked about Vincent Van, I mean Tim Van Patten's character is like, you know, he's really tough and like, you know, kind of like intimidating and stuff, but like, you know, that like you just kind of like push him, like he falls down, like he doesn't like have any like real like, you know, fighting skills or anything, like he can't do anything, which is like it's just, he's one of those kind of, he's almost like a big baby, like, you know, he's like one of those types of characters, like he's like a you know,
like a
baby Huey type, like, you know, pissed off, you know,
he's
like a bully, but he like can't really do that much. You know,
like
what I mean?
the big guy from Green Mile that ended up dying in real life. It's like him. like, you heard that he was a sweetheart.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Yeah. If you ran into him on the street and he had a mean look on his face,
he'd be like, oh, geez.
Like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But then he'd be a teddy bear. But it's also.
But I mean, yeah. But this is more of like a, you know, he's just like a
he's just like a
hot air balloon. Like he's like hot air, full of hot air. Like so, you just give him you fight back and he just falls down like.
And that's what they said. And that's, you know,
which I like.
My bodyguard was like that. That guy was, you know,
Matt
Dillon was all tough and everything.
Yeah.
But then as soon as he got his ass kicked and knocked down, then he stopped being.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't as tough as.
So this is the same type of idea. Right.
But. What else? I think it's after this where he goes and plays piano. So they get Michael J. Fox and the girl out of there.
That was a great little scene too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it showed there was another side to him. He was like an artist, but he's like a total maniac at the same time.
I
guess he made that himself. He wrote that himself. Tim Van Patten,
he did that
whole thing himself, which is
which is
kind
cool
of a cool
too, because if it was Lean on Me or Stand and Deliver, it would be, see, there's more to these kids than you know. But this is just
Not
saying anything, just playing it. And he's like, now can I be in your fucking thing?
Right.
He's like, nope. And he's like, and then he gets really angry. He's like, I don't want to be in
then
this.
He got really pissed off.
Yeah. It's like, oh.
Asshole band anyways.
And
Stegman doesn't play in anybody's asshole band. Whatever.
And what's his name gets his, and then gets his hand cut.
Perry
Roddy McDowell. And Roddy McDowell has already, why he drinks in class. That's why he carries a gun. He's like, nobody's learning nothing.
Yeah, he's on the edge, that guy.
Yeah.
He's totally on the edge. Like one little thing is going to make him snap or something.
Yeah, and, which it does. And again, this just keeps amping up. So then I don't know if it's now. It's right after this, isn't it? That he comes to school and that they're like, hey, you need to come to your class to Roddy McDowell. And
they've totally ripped apart all the
he had
the
all
frogs and all like the the like all bunnies, these animals that were like cats. Yeah, what it was. But it was like all for like you know, the what do you call it, class, like science biology class, show, so they can like do like experiment, whatever that's called. I forget
everything. Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, all that stuff.
But
they totally like just like, you know, terror.
And my
wife goes,
holy shit. I go, yeah, because they got that one little like hamster like tied to the little.
They got it like on like a spit.
Yeah.
And yeah, it looks like it's like on a spit like or something.
Other ones stuck on the wall and their skin
smeared all over the wall and
the
everything.
Cat's hanging from a noose.
It was pretty nasty.
Like, and I'm like, holy shit. Yeah. Like this has gotten bad.
And that's when he kind of goes off. Like
that's when he goes and pushes
he goes off his rocker.
Van Patten into the river. That's when he goes off his rocker.
Yeah.
That's when Perry King runs, pushes Tim Van Patten into the bathroom and starts yelling at him.
Yeah.
And when he slams his head into that
is
mirror,
that when he smashes his head against the
I go, honey, this is like fear.
You know he's crazy.
I go, this is like fear. Remember fear where Mark Wahlberg was like beating himself up saying she did
That's
it?
Probably I wouldn't be surprised if that's where he watched this movie before he made that and he's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do what Tim Van Patten does in this movie.
You
never know, he could have done that too.
I was like, holy
he's that type
shit.
Of character, like
I was like, oh my god, because he's beating himself up on the mirror, he's goes to hit himself into the where the hand dryer is and like his face and Perry King's like, stop, just
and then
don't
he makes
do
it
this.
Look like the teacher beat him up and stuff.
And then they come in and that's when he's like, look what he's doing to me. Oh, and he wipes the blood on his hand. I like that where he's like grabs his fist real quick and puts blood on it.
Yeah, that was good.
And he's like, look what he did to me. And you're like, oh shit. And then that's
he's really good at like getting away with stuff.
Yeah, but also
like,
good.
Because you can tell from the movie that like, you can tell from the movie, like, this has been going on for years. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they've been getting away with this stuff for
years. Yeah, that now
and
a new
and, like,
teacher
you know,
came on and can do this.
This is going to be like the, this is probably going to be the last time, like, the, you know, something's going to go off and, like, he's going to.
But also, the thing.
He's not going to be able to get away with it. Like,
exactly. But the thing for this movie to take that turn where you think you're watching, it's going to be a gang in a school, new teacher's going to come in, maybe he'll fight him a little bit, something. Yeah. But now this adds another level to it. Now the guy beats himself up, says he did it, goes home. His mom's really sweet to him. He's kind of a dick to his mom a little bit, still loves her. But then when he wants to talk to him, he's like, no. And then he goes down to the car. I'm like, oh, shit, he's going to because they burned his car first with the Molotov cocktail.
That's right. They blew up his car.
And he goes and gets in his car, hot wires it and just starts slamming it into everything. And I'm like, he's slamming into other. Yeah, it was really cool.
And yeah, into like, other people's cars.
Yeah, I said.
I noticed. I was watching when I was in that little scene before he goes down and smashes the car. Stegman is watching a movie on the TV. That's one of Mark Lester's earlier movies. Did you ever see Bobby Joe and the Outlaw? Did you ever see that one?
Oh yeah,
with Linda Carter. Linda watching that on TV. I thought that was a fun little.
I didn't realize it was a Mark Lester film, but I was like, oh, that's
it was
Linda Carter shows her boobs again, more boobs. I'll take it.
Bobby Joe and the Outlaw.
But I saw that like last year for the first time. And I was like, that was interesting. It was on TCM or something.
It was it's sort of like a low budget 70s Bonnie and Clyde type movie. Yeah. I thought it was good. I liked it. Bobby Joe and the Outlaw. That was good.
Yeah. Especially the way end and everything. Yeah. Everybody check it out. I think it's on HBO Max maybe. Yeah. But I noticed that. I always like that. That's the thing. Us movie guys that are always like, what's that movie playing on screen? Oh my God. They're watching, you know, on Jackie Brown, they're watching Dirty Man.
And then you want to go watch the movie or something.
Yeah. Then you're like, I want
to. Or like Mad Dog Killer or something. Yeah. I love those little movies.
Yeah.
It makes you want to like go watch the movie.
When we were doing our other podcast, me and my cousin, when we did this other one, we had watched, we went through all the Quentin movies. And when we did Jackie Brown, I was like, oh, I got to see that movie. And I went and watched Mad Dog Killer right after. So it's cool.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites too.
I really like it.
Let's see, genre.
That had a good bad guy. But but this is, so then it's amping it up. He wrecks his car. He comes in. Yeah. So what'd you do? He goes, what do you mean? I didn't do anything. And now he's like trying to get, so now they're in the lunchroom. Oh yeah, so this part was done cool, but also
now they're gonna get Michael J. Fox's character.
Michael,
right? That's the next attack.
It's an innocent thing where Perry King is talking to Michael J. Fox, he's talking to the cop. And he's like, oh, this is Michael J. Fox. This is a cop. This is Michael J. Fox. And he's just introducing him. They think that he's saying that he's going to testify. He's giving up
the information. Yeah, right.
And
right.
So they're like, we got to fuck him up. So then they're at lunch later that day. And all of a sudden, they're
and
like,
they hire some new kid.
And the kid's like, sure. And he gives him this crooked switchblade, this really cool, weird snake-like switchblade.
And that's and the, then, that's the kid that came into the punk club. Remember, that's the kid that came into the punk. He's like, oh, I want to work for you guys. And he's like, oh, well, you're a little bit too young. We'll get back to you. Oh, so then they actually hire this guy. This is like his first. This is like the mob-like thing where they hired the guy to, like, you know, see if he's going to, like, you know, if he's going to do the job so he'll be part of the group, like, or something.
I forgot about that, but that was another kind of
whatever he was. Yeah.
It was another kind of cool thing before.
It's like an initiation. It's an initiation
thing.
The
girl being like, I want to be part of this. And he's like, take off all your clothes.
Yeah. And that's the other girl too.
And so, but then he walks over. So they cause a distraction. And then he goes over and stabs Michael J. Fox. And I'm like, holy shit. I go, this movie nailed. Went there. Like, he got stabbed. Yeah. He's on the ground. Next thing you see, he's in the hospital and they're telling Perry King, like, well, we don't know. He's stable. And all of a sudden you're like, I'm like, where are the parents? Where are his parents? Shouldn't they be there? Like, you don't tell the teacher.
There's nobody. I know their parents. Yeah. Nobody's there.
But
he's just there by himself. But it's like it's still going. It's still amping up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still not done yet. It's still going.
Now you've almost killed that guy. Then Michael J. Fox is okay, but he won't testify against them. And then now is that when they go? And this movie's only an hour and a half long, but it seems
this now they go to now do they go to. Now they go to the teacher. Well, I don't know. Did we get to the part where Roddy McDowell attacks them? He attacks them. I think it was right after the class.
Right after that.
Oh, that's right after that.
I think so.
But then he tries to attack him. I can't remember. Does he get killed? Does a car blow up or something? I can't remember that part.
No,
he's driving down the street and like first, the car hits another car and it blows up or something.
So first, Roddy McDowell's got a gun on him, on his whole class.
And that's in class.
Yeah.
He's asking the students, like, you know, to see if they'll get it right or not.
But you see that they're actually just like him playing the piano, Tim Van Patten, you see that they are actually pretty smart. They've retained some stuff. When he's like, what's a female chromosome? Why?
At gunpoint.
What is this? Yeah. And they're answering, but then Tim Van Patten can't answer. But then
Stegman doesn't get his answer right.
And so
he almost shoots him too.
So then they wrestle the gun out of his hand. But now he's like creeping along at night in his car, drinking, and he's ready to run them all down.
Right. Looking for the kids,
and he's and hitting that's what
he
them. Does, and
he tries to.
Stegman's wearing like a Terminator 1 jacket. Remember when
they look like they look like they like just came out of like Terminator.
They're
wearing like the same type of clothes as Arnold in that movie.
And then tries to come around to hit him some more, and then that's when
he's on top of the hood of the car.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then he flips the car over,
and then he hits another car. I think.
And hits a car and his car. And I'm like, oh, maybe. And my wife went to the restroom or something. I go, maybe he's okay. And then the whole car explodes. I go, never mind, honey.
Nope.
And
maybe he's okay.
And I'm like, holy shit. Like, now they killed him. Like, that was the thing, too, when they're like,
there's another one. Another
thing. Take you to the hospital. But then Roddy McDowell's like, I'm fine. And like grabs his stuff and walks out like no problem. And you're like, okay. Right. But then he's attacking him. But then, now he's dead.
Right.
Now, you know, Perry King tries to tell
I think
you need to leave.
Go ahead. Yeah. I think the next part was when he went to the kid's house. I thought that's when he went to the kid's house. Maybe. Then he smashes up the car. Then Stegman comes in and says, oh, you're the one that smashed my car. You're the one that did it. And the cop's there. And he says, you have any problem, Mr. Norris? And he's like, no, Mr. Stegman is just leaving. So then he leaves. And then that's when they go after his wife. And then that's, you know what I mean? They go to his house and they attack his wife. And that's like the next.
Yeah.
That's probably like the last thing. I think so. I think that's like the.
I was thinking it was. Because he was leaving his house when he went down to the parking garage and saw his car talking to the mom and then went down. So that's why I was thinking it was right after he beat him up.
I can't think.
Yeah. But it don't matter.
Yeah, it could have been. You could be right. I'm not sure.
But
it's either or. So, either or. It's so then, know, it's going that way anyway.
So she sends him off to go do this concert, which is vitally important. They're all doing well. Yeah. They're doing good. And they're going to perform.
The kids are really good.
They're going to perform at the theater. And then all of a sudden she's getting ready. And because my wife's like, why didn't she go with him to the thing? And I'm like, well, she's going to come later. They're going to practice.
Yeah.
And then she's lays her dress out, getting ready, put on. And there he is. There's one of the bad guys in the thing. And you're like, oh, shit.
All the gang comes in.
And they all come in. And you're like, and oh,
yes,
shit. He's trying
they
to run.
Do.
Yeah.
And yes, whatever you think is going to happen does, in fact, happen.
At first, I'm thinking, okay, it's going to be Stegman. Stegman's going to rape her. But then they each have a turn. And you're like, oh, my gosh.
Right.
And the woman is
not the normal, like they
yeah, she takes the Polaroid and then saves it. And what were you gonna say? It's not your normal
It's not like the thing like where they're just like gently doing it. It's like they're like making it like so rough and so like
it's
just like, you know, thrusting with like, you know, they're at a punk club type idea. It's like a, you know, punk rock like rape scene.
But also though, not
so that's like, as, you know, that's what anyways. So anyways.
But not like
they're not,
you
know, delicate,
done in a tasteful way, if you can say that, tasteful way. But
yeah, I guess but, so.
But then they take her with them, put her in the van.
Yeah,
they drive to to the place at the auditorium, and she gives that guy the envelope and like, give this to the teacher. And he runs up to the front.
The
and
he's teacher.
Like, this woman over there, she gave me this. And he opens it up and you're like, oh shit, what's he gonna do? I'm like, is he gonna yell? Is he gonna?
I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, really, as far as escalating, it's doing a good job escalating the stuff even more and more.
Yeah.
Like that's that's why it's a good I
think
it's good, really
buttons.
Good on that level. It's
they're
you know,
they're pushing each other.
It's getting worse and worse.
And and then finally he just goes running and he's like, where is she? Where is she? And that girl's like running away. And he's got to go down into the bowels of the school, wherever he's going. And then,
The gymnasium and wherever he was.
And then this is when it gets a little grindhousey, if you want, you know, like where it's
this
got
is,
like the saw.
Well, it's been pretty good. Saw. Yeah.
Right. Well, Well, I mean, like
that was an awesome. I didn't think they were going to do that. In that scene, should we just spoil the whole thing? I mean, that scene, like with the kid on the saw, like usually you never see. Yeah. Usually you never see that. I won't like say exactly what happens, but usually you don't think they can actually do the whole thing, but they do. They do. They go all the way with that,
really,
which was like pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That gets points. That gets grindhouse points from me for that.
Well, and basically we won't run
it.
We won't run it because there's some cool things in there, but he's got to, he's got to get rid of all them before he gets to the boss bad guy.
Right.
So, and then they're like, you know, where is he? He's up on the roof with her. Yeah. And so then he has to go up and get her.
And that's like, that's like the end of the movie.
Yeah. And it is. Oh, it's so
and it's
good.
A good, that's a good ending too.
Yeah.
The ending is awesome too.
Yeah.
It's so,
perfect.
It's so, it delivers like, you know what I mean? It's like, you don't know what's going to happen. And then it's like, you know, so the way it goes, it's like awesome. It's very like satisfying on that level.
I give it
so,
four.
I mean, this was a really good movie, a really good, awesome movie.
I give this one 4 stars.
Me too. I'd give it
because,
4.
Because, it was, you know, it was good. I could see watching it again. I could see bringing people over and being like, hey, you need to watch this. Like, you know, it'd be awesome. So,
yeah. And I guess I didn't know that Roger Ebert said it was the best film he saw at the Cannes Film Festival in 1982.
Wow.
That's pretty good praise.
Wow.
I didn't realize that. I knew that he liked it, but I didn't realize that.
It was interesting,
awesome.
Too. I don't know if you looked this up, but in the beginning, it says this is a true story
based on true events or something.
Yeah. And you're
yeah,
like,
I saw
and
that.
Like,
and actually
like,
the other movie was, so I was going to. Right. I mean, I mean, that probably it was part. I'm sure it was loosely based on events that, you know, that type of stuff happened. But the other movie, was based on some true event too, like loosely based on something that happened.
Yeah,
like
some girl
the part that... where Alley Cat, the part where girl, where she tries to defend somebody from getting, you know, raped or something, and they take, you know, they arrest her for doing it or something like, you know, something like that. One of those little things that happen. But yeah, so what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I was going to say almost like, remember when Fargo came out and it said based on true story or true events?
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh my God, but this that was really fake happened? Though,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's like, this really happened?
It wasn't though.
And the Coen brothers are like, Coen brothers.
I love
like,
that movie, well, by the way.
Maybe somebody somewhere got kidnapped. Maybe somebody somewhere got thrown in a wood chipper. But none of this.
It's like a bunch of things connected. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was that's one of my favorite movies too.
Oh yeah. So I took a quick.
So Class of 1984 gets a good score.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
No, I was just gonna say I took a friend to go see Fargo after I saw it in the theater. And I took my friend, I go, you got to see it. She's like, okay, we're sitting through it. At the end of the movie, she looks at me. We're walking out. She goes, you like that movie? I go, yeah, it's fucking good. She goes, it was like, it made her look at me in a different way because I liked it. Like, okay.
Really? That's weird.
Yeah. Because she thought maybe I'm like Steve Buscemi or like, you know, the wood chipper.
Deranged or something.
Who knows? Yeah.
You're like Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
You're going to throw in the wood chipper or something.
Yeah, exactly. So.
No, that was just an awesome. But I mean, the Coen brothers, we love the Coen brothers stuff.
Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, Class of 84. Yeah.
Class of 1984 was great.
Really good because
that was a good one.
Like I said, I was expecting one thing, like kind of maybe a revenge thing, but not
just one
back
thing.
Back and forth, back and forth, and amping up.
Escalating.
Yeah.
Yeah, the escalation.
And the coolest thing was him
beating
himself up.
That's why it's so good. It's awesome.
Him beating himself up in the bathroom is the coolest. And I could see that where, like we said, if you and I went and saw this, or let's say I went and saw it in the theater in 82, then I'd be like, oh my God, Peter, I got to take you to see this movie. You got to say there's a part in the bathroom. I can't tell you about it. You just got to see it. Or the end. I got to show you this part on the table saw. Like, really cool.
You don't think he's going to actually do it.
Yeah. 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 Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it really was awesome. I love this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it was good. Thank you for sharing that with me. I appreciate it. It was awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. I was like, you know, I knew that you'd probably like that one the most out of both of these.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we both liked Alley Cat, but this one just has so much good stuff in it when it comes to, like, you know, that good old grindhouse, like, you know, content.
Yeah, so much. Yeah, just awesome. Full of pulp, full of whatever. It was just meaty and good. Yeah.
Right. It had the right amount of action, the right amount of revenge, the right amount of gore. Acting, you know, it was just
good bad guys. Just the right amount.
Yeah, it was good acting.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, those kids were like so like hateful. They were just like the worst, like
and individualistic
good actors. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So that was I'm trying to think if anything else we want to get to.
And so were those were playing together at the Deuce?
Those were playing on April 10th at the Rialto Theater April 10th.
As a double feature or
It was a double feature, I think, on that. It wasn't like a two separate theaters. It was just two separate screens. Yeah. It was just a double feature. That would be a good double feature to go see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Alley Cat was the Alley Cat was the newer movie. I think it had just come out like a couple months earlier. And Class of 1984 had been out like for a couple of years. That was like
the
bottom
of
the bill.
Yeah.
Like, but still awesome film.
But that's what's awesome. Cool. That's what's cool that we said about these grindhouse movies is they would stay in the theaters for a while. And so if you didn't see it, you'd be surprised by holy shit. Like I went to see Alley Cat.
Still be there for a while, for a few years. Yeah.
I went and saw Alley Cat and then I was surprised by this movie I didn't know about from 2 years ago. Like, holy shit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they always did that. They always had like some older film.
Yeah. It's like we did. Yeah.
Even like from like, you know, they probably have like even like, with Zombie, that was still playing like in what year was that, 1983 or 84 or something?
Yeah.
So it was still playing, which was like, you know, just showed you how popular it was.
There's these things with the, not only these movies that you're showing me, movies that we're doing on my podcast is that stick with you. Like that Zombie movie, like I think about it almost every day of like that street of them walking down the street to go to the thing to lock it up, like
that was awesome
in there, like,
and the shark and Zombie,
the shark one is the best, like underwater,
of course, the shark,
like,
and Zombie
walking up to her. So good.
That scene is awesome.
Yeah
That was great. So that was an awesome double feature. So I don't know if you want to wrap the show up or
Yeah, sure.
Keep going.
I'm ready whenever you are.
Okay. I know. Okay, so this has been 42nd Street Forever, and I've been talking with Phil from Making Tarantino. Thanks, Phil, for being here. And
no problem.
We'll try to do another episode on another good double feature.
Yes, for sure.
And we'll see you next time.
All right.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you. Bye, everybody. Bye, Peter.